Hi, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. I'm Chris Newton, and today we're going to be talking about Jordan. And you can check out all our shows at www.traveladviceshow.com and email us at show@traveladviceshow.com. And I'd like to introduce our co-host. How you doing, Jerry?
Fantastic. How are you, Chris?
Oh, doing good. Thank you. I'm excited about the topic today. And would you like to introduce our returning guest?
Oh, yes. We're excited again to have Hugh of Cox and King back with us, talking about one of the most fabulous countries in the Middle East and definitely in the one of the best in the entire world, up in probably in the top 20, 25, I think, because it's so unique and different. And welcome back, Hugh.
Hi. Very nice to be welcomed back, Jerry and Chris, and a pleasure to talk about Jordan.
Yeah. What I'd like to start out with, as we normally do, we just would like to start out with sort of an overview of Jordan, because a lot of people haven't been there, and some may not even realize where it is. But basically, if you want to tell us where it's located and when the best time you think is to go to Jordan?
Right. Yep. Jordan is located in the Middle East, next door to, just to the east of Israel and above Egypt. So it is a country with quite a lot of variety in terms of landscape. When people think of Middle East, they often think of desert, but that, whilst Jordan does have some fantastic desert, but that's by no means all that there is there. You have some very fertile areas as well. And if you, it's parts of the north of the country, you could, are more Mediterranean in aspect. So Jordan, think of it, it's just at the eastern end of the Mediterranean. And best time of year to go, I would say, because it does get very hot during the summer months, is between October and May. There is, people should be aware, though, that in the it does experience all four seasons. And over the winter time, you, if you were visiting, you could be having to wrap up in warm clothes. Indeed, at the principal attraction of Jordan, the ancient city of Petra, it has been known to snow.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Best times really, I would say spring and autumn. But you can, if you want to go, because it's a small country, you can get around very easily, and you could actually visit all year round. But just bring warm clothes in the winter and a hat and water bottle in the summer.
Okay.
And I know one thing that I found interesting, which is because I like trivia. If anybody wants to sort of see what it looks like, just go see the movie Lawrence of Arabia. Because that's where they filmed the majority of it, and yeah, most of the exterior down near Wadi Rum in that area. So it gives
yep.
an idea of some of the scenery. I know you like Jordan as much as I do. Why do you like Jordan? What is it about Jordan, or what are the things about Jordan that really make it outstanding, even more so than, say, some of the surrounding countries?
Well, the first thing that attracted me to Jordan, Jerry, was a great desire to see the ancient city of Petra. It was one of the lost cities in the world, and it was rediscovered by the Western world in, I believe, 1812. Until then, people had heard of it, but no Westerner had seen it since ancient times. So that was the draw to Jordan, the initial draw. But to answer the question, why do I like Jordan? Having been there many times now, I think the main attraction for me is the friendliness of the Jordanian people. Mm-hmm. They really are, to me, one of the highlights of seeing the country. Just engaging in conversation with them, talking, and just learning about their world. So that's one answer from someone who's been many times. But I think there are many reasons why you can like Jordan. One of the principal reasons why people will visit Jordan is for the history and culture. Jordan it has been on one of the major invasion routes of history. And through time, it's had all sorts of people who have come and lived and settled and conquered, including the Romans, the ancient Greeks, one of Jordan's original settlers, the Nabataean Arabs. More latterly, the Crusaders passed through here. Saladin campaigned here as well. The Ottoman Turks, there was a British mandate, and now we have Jordanian independence. So it really is the layers of civilization there from the cultural point of view that make it so fascinating. There's also a lot of biblical history to be seen in Jordan. But there is a lot more to the country. I think it's one of the misconceptions many people have is that the Middle East is only about history and culture and stones. That's far from the truth. There is a lot of that, and that's fantastic. But Jordan is, you know, lots of different types of holidays. You can have active holidays. Great, you mentioned Lawrence of Arabia and the deserts at Wadi Rum. Those represent some fantastic climbing opportunities if you enjoy climbing. Also, you can take camel. I went on a five-day camel excursion down there once, which it was trying to follow a Lawrence dream, but without wearing the headdress. But it's, you can do that. You can go trekking down there.
I would love to do something like that.
In the middle of the country, there's another very beautiful natural scenic area called Wadi Dana, which is, well, in addition to being lots of trekking opportunities to be had there. And then for people, in Jordan has about 12 miles of coast, and at the tip of the Gulf of Aqaba, and there's some of the best diving in the Red Sea to be had there. The waters circulate around there and are very clear. So if you have divers, Aqaba is also something that, you know, is of added interest to a visit to Jordan. A further one, if you have people interested in wildlife, admittedly it's more sparse, but Jordan does have a noted bird sanctuary out at Azraq, and they're trying to in the eastern part of the country, they're trying to reintroduce the Arabian oryx, which is a beautiful animal with enormous horns, and that is at, you can go and see those at the Shamwari Wildlife Reserve. A further place for wildlife, where wildlife can be seen, is in the Wadi Mujib Canyon. So there really are lots of, and then I suppose one last thing, a big aspect of Jordan's tourism, is the Dead Sea. Jordan shares the Dead Sea with Israel and the West Bank, and there are a number of first-class resorts that have been built there. And indeed, one of the largest spas in the Middle East is has just been opened by the Kempinski Ishtar Hotel there. So you can pamper yourself, you can walk all over and be active, and you can really see some of the most extraordinary archaeological sites in the world. And a further thing perhaps people may not be aware of is that Petra, the principal archaeological site of Jordan, was recently voted number 2, I believe, in the New Wonders of the World. So it's not me just saying it's incredible. That's an internet audience of I don't know how many hundreds of thousands that put it there.
Well, while we're talking about, going around, and you mentioned the Dead Sea Resort. First of all, I think we ought to mention, you already mentioned how small it is, but can you give us an idea of how small it really is? I mean, all the way from up Jerash, which is almost on the Syrian border, clear down to Aqaba, about how long, if you were to drive it normally, say, along the King's Highway or the Desert Highway, how long do you think it would take? I know King's Highway is longer, but just if you were to drive, to give people an idea of how much they can actually see in a very short time.
If you would drive nonstop from up Jerash, which is only 1 hour to the south of the northern border, to Aqaba, in the southern extremity of the country, that would take about 4.5 hours. Because the distances are short, and because there is so much to be seen in Jordan in terms of archaeology, it means that your sightseeing days don't involve the long drives that occur in many larger countries. You can pace the trip to be, you know, very manageable. So you would see somewhere in the morning, maybe two places, stop for lunch, and food is something I'd like to talk about a bit later, and then carry on, visit another site, and be at your destination in the late afternoon. So it really is very easy and manageable. Getting around, because it's a smaller country, most people, it might be worthwhile to talk about what would be a typical duration for a traveler to Jordan. And I would say, if you really wanted to see a large amount of the country, you would 10 days could comfortably accommodate nearly everything. Of course, you could spend longer. But most people typically, if they're doing a Jordan-only itinerary, would be spending between a week and 10 days. Mm-hmm. If you're combining it, because Jordan is also a very popular combination with neighboring countries, such as people who want to add on a visit to from Egypt or maybe Israel, then a highlight tour could be accomplished if you had a car and driver in 4 nights and 5 days. If you're public transporting it, of course, you have to factor in a bit more time there to make sure you're getting between A and B. But it is a small country, but it is very manageable.
Mm-hmm. Now, we were talking about Petrum and the resorts. For example, I mean, they can fly into Amman, maybe an overnight there, or go up to Jerash. But, I mean, then most people will stay on the Dead Sea and float in the sea a little bit. And there are hotels near Petra, aren't there?
There are. There, 15 years ago, there was just one hotel at Petra. That's all changed with the improvements in the political situation in the Middle East. And there are a host of good hotels now at Petra. Probably the best hotel there is the Mervenpick Hotel, which is very favorably located, maybe about 300 meters from the entrance to the site of Petra. And why this is significant is because it's really important to emphasize the scale of the site of Petra. To get from one end of the site to the other would probably, without stopping, would probably take you at least 2.5 hours walking. So it is just enormous. Therefore, people, it's not a place where you can see in 30 minutes, 40 minutes. You really, to see it properly, have to dedicate at least a full day, and I would recommend 2 days to see the site. Lots of walking is involved, and because of that, and the fact that the sunlight changes the whole time. Petra is known as the Red City, and it's on account of its beautiful red marbled rocks. And at different times of day, these take on all different hues and aspects. So seeing the treasury, which is one of the principal monuments of Petra, in the morning is a very different experience from seeing it at midday. Or there are other monuments as well. So plan on taking one full day if you want to get an overview, but if you really want to see the site, and most people who travel with Cox and Kings spend 2 nights at the site just so they can really get a feel for it.
And one thing we mentioned about walking in the Wadi, but there are other ways to go in, aren't there? And do you recommend them?
Anyone visiting Petra has to have a reasonable degree of mobility, because it's true that you can, if you can take a horse and buggy, there are a limited amount of horse and buggies that will take you through the entrance way, from the entrance of the site to the principal monument, which is right at the beginning of the site, called the treasury. That walk, if were you to do it, would take 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But the buggies are not allowed to proceed further.
Right.
It's possible, if you really wanted to, then to hire a camel to take you a little bit further in. But you really should, if you're visiting, have to get around the fact that you will be doing some walking and it's uneven. That's the logistics of the site. When you get into the site, there are restaurants, there are bathroom facilities, etc. So it, even though it is takes you a while to get in, you are catered for whilst you're there.
Right.
It might be worthwhile to mention with Petra, there are two principal monuments, and the audience may be familiar with another film that was shot in Jordan or partially shot in Jordan, called Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. At the final sequence of that film, Indiana Jones walks through a gateway into a on the portal of that gate is a magnificent-looking red Roman palace. That's actually in Jordan, in Petra. What happens beyond that is totally fiction as far as the ancient site is concerned. But that building is called El Kazneh. It was a tomb, and is now known to most visitors as the Treasury. But that's just one of the monuments there. It's probably its most magnificent. There's another one that's even larger than that building called the Monastery. And they were built, the Treasury was built there. It was what the tomb of one of Petra's ancient kings, or most powerful kings, and it was built in a location to receive the morning sun, whereas the monastery is built on a place high up, and it gets the evening sun. Those are the two principal monuments. There are lots of other tombs. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of tombs there. Because they're all carved into the naked rock, you can get, unlike I think many sites in Greece and Rome, which are really quite ruined, you can get a full idea of what it might have been to see a Roman house. The people who built these buildings were not Romans, but they were actually Nabataean Arabs, but they were very much influenced by the classical world. And as the Treasury, for example, is the equivalent of a 3 or 4 story building, and some of the other tombs, there's a series of other tombs called the Royal Tombs, some of those extend up to 5 stories. And it really does mean that your imagination doesn't have to run riot, because you can see there exactly at the facade of an ancient Roman building. It's just incredible. I haven't seen anything of it like elsewhere. But perhaps it might be an idea just to talk about some of the other attractions that Jordan has to offer, because Petra, of course, does take is normally a large part of someone's itinerary. But there are a number of other places too. We've mentioned the word Jerash before. Jerash is in to the north of Jordan, between Amman and the Syrian border, and is usually to most visitors one of Jordan's greatest surprises, because it is a very complete Roman city from the 1st century AD, and there are large temples with huge columns still standing up, a great marketplace, and wandering around there is superb. It's easily, but there are various other things that they've recently brought along at Jerash that bring it to life. A Swedish gentleman has recently started up what is known as RACE, which is Roman Army Chariot Experience. And every morning during the season, they use the ancient hippodrome or a place where the horses used to run around, and they put on mock gladiator displays of ancient chariot racing, and it just, I think, adds a bit of flesh and bones to the site and gives a more interpretive experience. So Jerash is definitely, I would definitely recommend as a must for visiting Jordan. Jordan also has a series of Crusader castles.
I'm glad you mentioned, because I was going to mention for sure, because that's different. Because people would never believe that in the Middle East, would they?
Well, Jordan was a buffer zone to the Crusader Kingdom of Jerusalem. And following the First Crusade, the Crusaders wanted to protect their gains, and they built a series of fortresses out in Jordan and going up into Syria. And one of the most strong castles in the Middle East is to be found in Jordan. It's called Kerak, and I believe it was actually never stormed. It was only because of the strength of the fortifications, it only submitted to starvation. So that is a very fine site. There is another castle that's well worth, if you like castles, well worth thinking about, and that is known as Ajlun. It's not a Crusader one, but it was built by Saladin's, I think, cousin. And it's a small castle located near Jerash. So that, again, is worthwhile. We've talked about Wadi Rum as well, down in the south of the country, which I think actually has some of the most spectacular scenery in the whole of the country. It is a large valley with red sand and rocks, it's during the Arab Revolt, Lawrence of Arabia spent quite a lot of time here, and you can really get a feel for the majesty of the desert and meet, if you're lucky, the Bedouin mounted police who still patrol the region, and that's a great sight. There are there are some religious sites that we should also not ignore to be found in Jordan. First of those is probably Bethany, down on the Dead Sea. This is believed to be the site where John the Baptist baptized Jesus Christ. And using various, right down there on the Jordan River. So that's a highly significant site for Christians and Jews, and it's very interesting to see. Likewise, there is also the site of Madaba and Mount Nebo. Mount Nebo is where the Promised Land was first seen. It's also, so from there, there's great views looking over the West Bank and then into Israel. It's also some very beautiful mosaics to be found there in the church. Likewise, just down the hill from Mount Nebo is Madaba, and in the Church of St. George, it's a very significant and historic mosaic map dating from Byzantine times. And this is a map of the world as they thought it was then, with Jerusalem at its center, and setting out all of the sites that may be common or familiar to the audience from the Bible. So it's a very useful archaeological tool in helping interpret the Bible as history. So those are just some of the amazing places to be seen. There are many other, another site that might be from religious history and also archaeological that might be of interest is right up in the north of the country, a place called Kais, or in the Bible known as Gadara, and that's the location of the miracle of the Gadarene swine, who had the devil, I think, kicked out, and they ran into Lake Tiberias or the Sea of Galilee, which is just there. So, yeah, lots of things to do. Have we talked about hotels?
Yeah, we could talk about hotels. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, because, I mean, Jordan is another of the attractions. Not only is it small, with a lot to see, with a lot of different interest, but it can also be visited in a reasonable amount of comfort. There's a Four Seasons Hotel in Amman, a Grand Hyatt. There's down in Aqaba, if you want to go for your diving, there's an Intercontinental. There's a Mövenpick, which is a very good Swiss chain of hotels. And in most of the recently on the Dead Sea, the Kempinski Ishtar has opened, and that went straight in with Condé Nast into the hot list. As I mentioned earlier, it also has one of the largest spas in the Middle East. So from the comfort level, that you can be very well looked after. The language of Jordan is Arabic, of course, but the English is widely spoken. The former king of Jordan, King Hussein, was a great friend of the West, and he had an American wife, a British wife, and the Jordanian people are very, very friendly and welcoming towards Westerners. They rely, Jordan doesn't have that much in the way of natural resources, so tourism is their gold, and you can really see it when you go and meet the people. One point. Many people, there is some concern because of the country's location about security, and it's a question I do get asked about a fair amount, and my response to it is, of course, you always have to look at the newspapers, listen to the news, and make your own judgment, but I also tell people who ask about a comment that was once made to me by a former minister of tourism for Jordan. And he said, Hugh, Jordan is a quiet house in a noisy neighborhood. And I think that's really very, very true. So traveling around, I think, is very safe. The people are warm and hospitable. And even if there are things going around or on in the vicinity, Jordan has managed to keep out of the fray since 1968, and it is a peace-loving country where people can go and relax and have a great time.
Let me mention one other thing, and you may want to elaborate. I know a couple of times when I've gone, like, flown into Amman, and then come on down to Aqaba, and I think people are absolutely stunned how close the major city of Israel is down there,
Eilat.
I mean, it's right there.
It is.
And you can take a hybrid oil. Well, one, talk about that, how you could actually do a circle tour like that. You cross in from the top part and exit from the bottom, or vice versa.
If you are in Israel, Jordan is very accessible. Jordan and Israel signed a peace treaty in the mid-90s, and unlike some countries in the region, it doesn't, from the point of view of, you can enter the country even if you've got Israeli stamps in your passport, and you could have in 2 days, for example, from Israel, if you were there, that would enable you to see Wadi Rum and Al-Jurash and Petra. So if you are thinking about a visit to Israel, it might be an interesting addition to your visit. Eilat is, as you mentioned, Jerry, just over the border from Aqaba. They share the same beach and very similar diving. So in terms, of course, Israel and the Israeli people have a slightly different lifestyle to Jordan. Jordan isn't, so that may color where you wanted to spend some time. The beach in Aqaba, though, isn't that appealing, especially if you're in the United States, when you have great beaches down in Florida or down in on the Gulf Coast or in California. This one here would be recommended for diving, but it's a narrow beach, and Aqaba is a container port as well. So I always do try and pour a bit of cold water on people who are enthusiastic about going and resting on the beach. If you want some downtime with a visit to Jordan, I think the unique place to have that is at the Dead Sea. That's an incredible place. Not only are the hotels there, or some of the hotels, of a very high standard with all the spa treatments, but the experience of floating in the Dead Sea is one that shouldn't be missed, and is, well, I'm not aware of anywhere else in the world where it's possible to be almost suspended by the saline water.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another thing I want to talk about a little bit. If you know about them, are the caravanserais in Jordan? I was amazed at how many people, as we talked about it, have visited and traveled across and through Jordan. But are you familiar with the caravanserais there?
I'm familiar with the term caravanserai, Jerry,
You haven't been to any
honestly, it hasn't featured. I've been to one or two ruined ones, but
there's probably, well, I know of about maybe seven or eight of them, and they're in the Far East Desert. You really have to make an effort to get to them, but I find they're very fascinating because all the way across that part of the world, all the way to Iran and other places, that whole area, they have caravanserais where the camel caravans used to go through. And I wasn't totally aware that they had so many of them in Jordan. So, I mean,
yes,
that's the part that you really have to make an effort to get out to them. They're just not on the main roads and the tourist side.
I mean, they're also known as the desert castles, and one of those they're located, as you say, to the east of Oman, going towards the Iraqi border, and they were built largely by the Umayyads, who were one of the first rulers of the Middle East following the death of Muhammad, and one of them, Qasr Amra, is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. The outside of the building doesn't look that startling, but when you get inside, there's some very significant frescoes. And whilst I think they can be called caravanserais, they're also called desert castles. Some people refer to them as pleasure palaces. The uses of some of these are not really well known, but Amra, it would appear, was actually a pleasure palace for the rulers, where the Umayyads, when they wanted to retreat from life in Damascus, which was where they were based, into the desert and to just get away, escape for a couple of days, they could come here, and they had proper Roman-style baths, and they are interesting. And going out there, you also get another site to mention going out that way is the castle of Azraq. And Azraq,
right,
I mentioned earlier in connection with the wildlife reserve, but there's a Turkish fort there, which anyone who is in the footsteps of Lawrence of Arabia will want to see, because that's where he spent the winter of 1917. So there are that's another theme. If you have read the Seven Pillars of Wisdom and want to trace T. Lawrence, Jordan is literally littered with sites associated with him.
Well, I want to do one more thing before we end the show.
Okay.
About because we were talking about different hotels, and we talked about the fabulous hotels there, and they're really not that super expensive. But on other hotels, what level do you think most travelers to be safe and feel safer and more comfortable? What level would you stay in a 2-star hotel there? Do you think?
Well, I would say you could be. Jordan has all levels of accommodation because it attracts tourists from all different price brackets. But looking at a Marriott hotel, the Marriotts have quite a presence in Jordan. That would provide, in U.S. terms, a 3-star accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst, of course, that's not particularly spectacular, it is nevertheless comfortable with all air-conditioned amenities and a good standard of dining. I would say, looking at what the Jordanians would call 4-star, but we'd look at as 3, would provide comfortable accommodation. But and as you say, it can be had at relatively good prices in dollar terms.
Mm-hmm. So Hugh, we want to thank you so much again.
Yeah.
This has been fabulous. You're just a fountain of information, and we appreciate very much you being on our show with us.
Yeah, thank you, Hugh. Yeah.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and I do hope that if I've said anything of interest, that it does inspire people who were thinking about taking the plunge to go ahead and book their trip.